Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio of WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Daniel J. Mahoney, author of The Statesman as Thinker, Portraits of Greatness, Courage, and Moderation. Dan, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Very happy to be here, John.
In your new book, you focus on Cicero, Burke, Washington, Tocqueville, Lincoln, Churchill, De Gaulle, and Vaclav Havel. That's an impressive group. What do these statesmen share in common that makes them great?
I think they all share in common what the ancients called greatness of soul. But we have to understand greatness of soul was not will to power, not rapaciousness, not a desire for power after power that seetheth only in death, as Thomas Hobbes puts it. But a greatness of soul also includes what I would call self-conscious moderation, what the ancients called the cardinal virtues, hence the subtitle of my book, Portraits of Greatness, Courage, and Moderation. And I think the kind of human being that combines honorable ambition, greatness, with self-restraint and moderation and genuine love of country and the best traditions of civilization, I think that's a defining character of the statesman that I treat in this book. I would also add that I only treated figures who in some important way were also thinkers and even thinkers of the first right.
So, Dan, explain that. The book is called The Statesman as Thinker. And, of course, we want in our statesmen and our leaders intelligence and wisdom. But do we want philosopher kings? I'm reminded of William F. Buckley Jr.'s line about not wanting to be ruled by the faculty of Harvard and preferring the first 2,000 people in the Boston phone book.
Well, I think Buckley was referring to a type that for a couple of centuries now we've called the intellectual. And just think of the Russian intelligentsia in the 19th century or Western intellectuals since the 1960s. They're not really interested in political responsibility. They're more interested, in many cases, in reckless activism or in ideological politics, trying to impose some utopian scheme on recalcitrant human nature and the complexities of history. No, these were men. I mean, Abraham Lincoln may never have written a book, but Abraham Lincoln's speeches against slavery, in favor of union, his deep and abiding reflections on human nature, they reflect a kind of philosophical statesmanship. Winston Churchill won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Charles de Gaulle wrote five major books between 1924 and 1940 dealing with broad questions, not only of military strategy, but of leadership, statesmanship, and touching on very profound questions of human nature and politics. Cicero, who did everything within his power to save the Roman Republic against Caesarian despotism, also, especially when he didn't have a field for his political ambition or political responsibility, he wrote very important works of political philosophy. Havel, who was certainly the quintessence of political moderation, anti-totalitarianism, was also a dramatist and writer. So there are these rare exceptions of statesmen who actually think in a deeper and more profound way. We could add the Publius, the three co-authors of the Federalist Papers. So I think we need statesman thinkers. I don't think we should look for it in most politicians, but I think the fact that that type, that exemplar of high-minded statesmanship is so rare today has more to do with the decline in education and then the decline in, you might say, the quality of political ambition and greatness than it does with the danger of such types.
Not every politician, of course, is a statesman or a thinker, as you say, and most voters, I think, are just on the lookout for basic competence. But what advice do you have for voters in terms of spotting great potential in candidates, perhaps as they begin to climb the political ladder? What should voters look for when they're trying to spot greatness, courage, and moderation?
Well, we live in an age of democratic mediocrity. I don't think we're going to find many Churchills or De Gaulles or Washington's or Lincoln's around. So, but I think we have to be open in principle to the possibility that such greatness might display itself again. I think maybe we can do a little bit better than competence. Competence is no mean thing, but I think we can look for qualities of character, breadth and depth of vision, and perhaps an ambition that also includes a deeper concern for the preservation of the country and its best traditions. It was only a generation or two ago that we saw such statesmen. You know, De Gaulle and Churchill died in 1965, De Gaulle in 1970, Adenauer, the first chancellor of the Federal Republic of Germany, died in 63, and he was certainly a very impressive anti-totalitarian statesman. I think it was Leo Strauss who said, the great statesmen take care of themselves, so we can't particularly prepare for them. It's a rare human type like the true philosopher. Not everyone who teaches philosophy in the university is a philosopher, far from it. But every once in a while, one does have the authentic thing. So I think it's harder to have outstanding statesmanship given the flattening of education. You know, someone I respect, Rick Burkheiser, has sort of a really noble cottage industry, writing moral biography in the Plutarchian style, books on Washington and Lincoln and many others. And I think there's a thirst in the public for that kind of thing because it is a reminder of a real, if moribund, possibility. But we're not going to, people's ambition is not going to be even stimulated unless, you know, we know political history, unless we read our Plutarch, unless we study statesmanship. And there's not much of that coming from the academy today. If anything, what comes from the academy is what Roger Scruton calls the culture of repudiation.
Dan, a figure who's emerged on the world scene since you finished your manuscript is President Zelensky of Ukraine. Some people have called him Churchillian in his resistance to the Russian invasion of his country. What do you think of him?
I think all of that is overwrought. I mean, I think there's no doubt that Zelensky has shown courage since the Russian invasion, but I think the Ukrainian-Russian situation is very complicated. You know, Zelensky ran for the presidency of Ukraine as a peace candidate, promising to enforce Minsk 1 and 2, which would have given more autonomy to the Russophone part of the country, the 40% of the country in eastern Ukraine. He backed off of that. You know, there's big issues about whether the inexorable march of NATO eastward was a great idea. So, look, I admire his courage. He's an attractive figure, but he's a very mixed figure. And, you know, Ukraine, whether we like to admit it or not, at the present moment is not exactly a model democracy. And so, no, Zelensky's not Churchill, and he's not a thinker. He's a comedian who's a very entertaining comedian. If you look at the YouTube videos on him before he went into public office. So I think that's hyperbolic. He's not a figure I would include in a revised version of my book, although I certainly understand why many people admire him at the present moment.
You have a short epilogue to The Statesman's Thinker in which you mention Donald Trump, and you clearly don't put him in your pantheon of great statesmen and thinkers, but how do you rate him as a statesman?
Donald Trump is not a statesman in the sort of normative sense in which I define the world, a high statesman, honorable ambition tied to the cardinal virtues. I only mentioned Donald Trump in the epilogue to my book because I knew if the book came out and there was no mention of Donald Trump, every reviewer would say, how come he doesn't mention Donald Trump? Well, there's a lot of American figures I don't mention. I give Trump credit for recognizing the culture of repudiation, the new racialism, political correctness for the dangers that they are. I give him credit at a very crucial moment in our country's history, the summer of 2020, for speaking up for the country and denouncing the madness that unfolded, the violence and mayhem, the cancel culture, the fact that many people simply lost their minds. I think his speech around Mount Rushmore around the 4th of July in 2020, where he evoked sort of a self-critical but proud and principled American patriotism, was one of his high moments, as was his speech in Warsaw a couple of years before. but he was also undisciplined. He was a boaster, an exaggerator of the First Order, more a boaster and exaggerator than a liar, as the left says. And he also was his own worst enemy, thinking that the tweeting that got, helped get him elected was an instrument for statecraft and governance. So it's a mixed picture. But, you know, in life, everything is comparative. And many of the people opposing Trump and many of the people on the political left simply had joined and were committed to a radical transformation of the country, a denial of the legitimacy, you might say, of American patriotism, and certainly bought into the worst features of the culture of repudiation. So I think an argument can be made, as Victor Davis Hanson has done, the case for Trump, but it is not a case for noble statesmanship. It's a case for the least bad alternative in a moment of political and moral crisis.
The author is Daniel J. Mahoney. The book is The Statesman as Thinker, Portraits of Greatness, Courage, and Moderation. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.